Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name is Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone.
Today we're coming at you from a sunny Los Angeles. And before we get into today's episode, Chris is going to read a 5-star review from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this is from Betty and it's titled Master Your Life. Amanda and Chris share a wealth of knowledge for a host of health and wellness topics. Their energy is contagious, and I can't wait for next week's episode to drop. That was short and sweet, but thank you.
Thank you so much for that review. If you guys could take a moment to leave us a review, whether it's short or long, however you like to slice it, it would mean so much to Chris and I. It really keeps us going, and it helps get the podcast out there. Mm-hmm.
So today we want to talk to you about sprints. Obviously, we're all stuck inside, at least most of us, in quarantine. We can't go to our gyms. We're all getting cabin fever over here. And so wanted to give you a little bit of an alternative to, you know, maintain that level of fitness, whether or not you're trying to lose some weight. I know most of our audience has a fat loss goal anyway, and maybe you're just addicted to that gym routine and this is kind of throwing you off your game. So we want to give you an alternative because I think sprints are the best, or one of the best bang for your buck exercises. If you're fat loss, I mean, I think anything should involve some level of resistance or strength training, weight training. Whether you're trying to build muscle, maintain, or lose fat, I think it should involve that. But if you are limited in terms of your equipment, you can always do body weight exercises or, like I said, HIIT or sprints. And most people know about HIIT or high intensity interval training, but most people don't know just how effective sprints are in general. And I know, you know, they've shut down some stuff, like you can't go to the beach. But I went to a park the other day. It was very sporadically populated. There's people, we're all keeping our distance, and I had a nice little lane of about 50 yards that I could sprint by myself when I wasn't around anybody. If you have that luxury, obviously take advantage. I know certain people in NYC where everybody's like right on top of each other, and even going outside for a walk could break that social distancing protocol that we have out there. So in that case, you know, you can maybe like do some stairs and you're maybe just limited to your apartment. And I apologize if this podcast might not apply to you, but we do give you some alternatives. You know, like we said, you can run some stairs, you can do some resistance training at home. And we talk about that at the end, but really we wanted to focus on the best bang for your buck exercise. And that is sprints.
Absolutely. And we're not discouraging you from other types of exercises. Again, it's just what sprints are one of the most time efficient. Yet you get a lot of benefit from them.
Right. Yeah. And depending on what your background is in terms of sports or physical fitness in general, sprints may come to you a little bit more difficult or come very easily and very natural. Like I know Amanda used to play soccer and you ran track back in the day, but sprints weren't really your bread and butter, right?
No, I was more of an endurance athlete. So not ultra endurance, but I ran the mile, the 2 mile. I was always doing the 500 meter swim and swimming. And my advantage in soccer was just my endurance to last the whole game. So sprinting does not come easy to me. It's not natural. But I've worked, you know, these past few years dating you to really up my sprinting game because, you know, you tell me how it is and you're like, Amanda, you could give a little more effort. I don't think that's your max out effort.
Right. Oh yeah. Let's not even call you out on the beach sprints over there.
And even in college, I kind of continued that trend. So maybe even worse because our go-to in college was to spend like an hour on the elliptical, like the hour chatting it away, mm-hmm. you know, burning off the calories in our mind. Again, not really an efficient use of my time, but it was absolutely better than nothing.
No, and that is what I was just about to say is that any movement is better than nothing. So if you are getting on the elliptical and doing that for 60 minutes, that's great. But if you want to step it up a little bit, optimize, like you said, be a little bit more efficient with your time, sprints are the way to go. And that was really the background that I come from, you know, because I was a sprinter in track. I played football. Even when I played soccer, I played forward. So that's mostly like short bouts of sprints and didn't have to really go back and defend that often, you know, things like that. So that was really where I came from. And we were really competitive. We played sports all the time after school. So sprinting is just comes very easily. But I understand if it doesn't for you, ease into it. Don't immediately just go out there and do your 100% effort. You might hurt yourself. You might pull something. So, but definitely start incorporating it and slowly integrating this into your program. And like I was talking about before, like certain sports like football, like baseball, which I played as well, it's a perfect representation of interval training, right? Because you have short little bouts of explosive activity and then followed by a rest. Like actually on the football field, you spend more time resting than you do actually working. And then so I mean, maybe that's a good time to explain the difference between HIIT and LISS, or anaerobic versus aerobic. So LISS exercise is low intensity, steady state cardio, and that falls into more the aerobic exercise. And aerobic literally means with oxygen. And so that means your muscles have enough oxygen to maintain the effort level to continue. So these would be like your elliptical cardio sessions or somebody running a marathon, things like that. Whereas HIIT training or high intensity interval training, that falls into the anaerobic category. And anaerobic literally translates to without oxygen. And what that means is that the demand for oxygen for whatever activity you're performing is greater than the supply. So eventually you have to take a rest. And this is why we call it interval training, because you have to rest in between and you can't just keep going steadily. So from what I've seen, the best non-weight training method to lose body fat is from interval training.
Now, the only exception to this would be if you're extremely overweight to the point where, you know, you're having problems moving around, you might have joint pain too. Then we suggest that you start with LISS, which is like more steady state cardio. You do some more walking, and then as you put off some of that weight, then you can start adding in interval training and weight training. So again, if you're very sedentary and very overweight, we recommend starting, you know, more light cardio, and then you can get into some of this higher level stuff.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, when you're sedentary or predominantly sedentary lifestyle, just adding walking to your routine is going to be extremely beneficial for you right off the bat. So like we said, interval training is intense movements in short bursts followed by a rest. It's typically intervals from anywhere between 10 seconds to a minute, followed by rest periods from 10 to 90 seconds, sometimes 2 minutes. And this depends on what you're doing for how long. And so for instance, like a 10 second sprint might only need a 20 second rest, but a 30 second sprint, so that would be like a 200 meter dash for most people, would need a little bit longer if you're going to recover and hit the next interval with intensity. And you want rest. I mean, obviously you want to get some rest, but you should always be pushing yourself into the next interval. You don't want to make sure you have a normal resting heart rate by the time you hit your next interval. You want to make sure that you're pushing yourself, pushing the limit. So you might even start with like a 2 minute rest after that 30 second 200 meter sprint, right? But eventually try to bring that down to a minute or even 45 second rest before you do your next interval. And you try to put a ratio to it just so you can maybe have some, you know, some goal to hit, right? You know, it'll definitely give you some indication as to an improvement in your endurance and conditioning and things like that. So maybe start with a work to rest ratio of about 1-4 and try tapering it down to 1-2 or 1-1.5. And then also you want to make sure if you're going to measure the intensity level of your effort with these interval exercises, you want them to be at least a 7.5 out of 10. I mean, we're talking about, you got to literally think about the max effort that you put in an all out sprint. Like you're being chased by the cops or somebody trying to hurt you, right? Why did I go with the cops? Like I'm some criminal. What the hell?
I just think about the time that you were telling you, there's that video of you being like, I told everyone to do all out sprint and look at you. And I like was not sprinting.
Just dogging it.
And you were like, that's the exact sound effect that you made.
That was perfect for it.
That was a little sidetrack right there.
Well, and when I was a kid, we would walk around the neighborhood in the city in St. Louis. And if we were bored, say on a Friday night or something like that, and we saw a cop car at a stoplight, we would just start running. And then they would chase us. And they'd be like, why are you running? Like, well, you started chasing us. We're like, no, you ran when you saw us. But I mean, it was just, we were just trying to look for a thrill, you know? And they would throw us
like
in the cop car.
Such a guy thing to do. I don't know a single girl that did this back in the day.
They would seriously throw us in the cop car, try to get the scare tactic and everything like that. But it was fun. So
that's
maybe that's
one
where
way
my...
to get your sprints in. Yeah. Start that game. No, but, you know, I think it's really, I like that you emphasize the effort there because, you know, I mean, you know when you're dogging it.
No, absolutely. And it's so funny because I've trained people before and we've gone out and done sprints. And when people are like, think they're sprinting, it's not sprinting because it's been so far removed since the childhood. Like, when's the last time?
It really is.
I'd like to do a poll on your story. Like, when's the last time you did an all out sprint? And I guarantee you 10% response would within the last year. So,
yeah, it's not something you think to do. I mean, they're hard.
Yeah. Oh, it's brutal. But that's the good thing about it is that you can go in and do a 10-minute sprint workout, and that'll be just as efficient as a 60-minute, you know, steady state cardio.
Absolutely.
And we can get to that. Actually, we might as well talk about that right now, because there's numerous studies that show that that say that you'll have more of a calorie burn during a steady state workout than you would during a sprint workout. But the EPOC causes the difference. Yeah, the EPOC, we'll get into that. It's an afterburn, but it causes that difference to collapse. And there's actually no difference. And you can actually see doing just a little bit of effort more on the anaerobic side will put you in the positive, and it makes it even more efficient with more efficient than aerobic activity. So this EPOC is called excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. It's a fancy way of saying afterburn, or the amount of energy you burn in the 24 to 48 hours of recovery after a very tough workout. And like, there's a study in 2012 that compared energy expenditure following 30 minutes of aerobic exercise with four 30-second sprints, and found that the amount of calories burned during the workout was 150% greater with the aerobic protocol than with the sprints. But the researchers looked at the 24-hour period that included the workouts, and the sprint group had caught up with the aerobic group, and energy expenditure was equal between them. So a number of reasons contribute to the elevation of metabolism that occurs following sprinting, and that is your body temperature is elevated, your lung and heart activity are increased as the body recovers, lactate and hydrogen's got to be removed, so that that takes up energy. Energy stores in muscles, they have to be restored, and fat burning hormones like epinephrine are increased.
Wow. No, I mean, that's definitely a lot more bang for your buck. And I mean, that's why you see places like Orange Theory popping up, which I do love, because they like to take advantage. I think they take advantage of the work EPOC. They do talk about that there.
Yeah, that's one of the main selling points. I think they do it within the, like, the little fire.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, whatever those points are or whatever. And, yes. And that is basically the amount of time you spend in that extreme level, the high effort realm. The thing I don't like about this is about the Orange Theory class is that it might be a little too long for that effort level, because you don't need that, because there is a law of diminishing returns, right? And this is why I kind of like to use sprinting as the main example for creating this type of workout. And because obviously you can do things like burpees and box jumps and stuff like that, but how do you really measure the intensity of a burpee? You know, I mean, really, I mean, they're hard.
Well, also,
obviously,
you don't want to, like, I mean, if you are doing it to do more intense, you can, but then you might lose your form a little. So there is that downside.
Well, again,
too.
I mean, if you know you got to do 15 burpees, you're not exploding up with full effort. You know, you go down into the full push up and you explode up as fast as you can. You hop up and you jump up as high as you can, right? You're not doing that in a burpee. You look around, most people doing burpees and they're doing the bare minimum to get through the movement because they know they got some more effort to do. So you really can't, most people wouldn't be able to get to an 8 to 10 intensity level for that. So that's why I like to keep sprints as the benchmark example for this, you know? And what we were talking about with the Orange Theory class is why I don't like how long it is, because if you actually are doing it correct, if you are in that 8 to 10 intensity level, right? If you're measuring from 0 to 10, if you are in 8 to 10, you shouldn't be going for a straight hour of that intensity level. It's just too much. I mean, you create a lot of the stress hormone cortisol, which increases with long workouts, because you start tapping into, first you start burning all the energy in your blood, the sugar in your blood, and then you start tapping into your glycogen stores, which are stored in your muscles. And then, because you have to continue that intensity. And so the problem is that as that stuff starts decreasing and the intensity level stays high for a certain amount of time, your cortisol is released, and then that tends to block the fat loss, right? Because it's not conducive to fat loss, because cortisol being stressful, you're talking about the sympathetic nervous system. What that does is try to perpetuate survival. What does your body do when it's in survival mode? It stores fat, because that's what it does for survival.
Right. So you are overdoing it, but I mean, I've seen so many amazing success stories with Orange Theory, but I think, you know what I think also it is, which might be, because you're on the treadmill, you do get some rest. Also, you could so you do go to the weights, so you could take it easier on the weights, which isn't as an efficient use of your time on weights, but that's what I was saying. You kind of, you know, you can really just, for me, I just go all out on the treadmill, and then I do probably like medium on the rowing machine, and then the weights, I'm just, you know, I'm working hard enough. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, I mean, I've seen amazing results from it and a good class, but I see what you're saying. Like, if you haven't built the workout on your own, you'd recommend doing sprints for 50 to 30 minutes. Yeah. And yeah.
I mean, honestly, if I were to change the Orange Theory class a little bit, if you wanted to keep it an hour, I wouldn't keep that, because you know how you go from your base pace to your push pace to your sprint. Mm-hmm. I would have two paces. I would have a resting pace and a sprint pace. And I would just make sure that the all out sprints, because how many people, when they're on their sprint pace or the push pace, right? Which one is it? Is it base?
The push.
Okay. So whenever you're in, essentially the push means your sprint. Nobody is sprinting there because they're already too tired from the other stuff.
You do the push and then the sprint, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, no one's sprinting after the push because you're already tired from the push pace.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying, is that you're not getting a true interval there. You're mm-hmm. just varying the intensity level from like small, medium, right. high, you know?
Which has some benefits, but not as good as this.
It obviously does. Like I said, the most people burn so many calories in there, it's enough to put them in an energy deficit. Because not only that, but intense exercise can actually suppress your appetite. Cortisol, mm-hmm. you know, being released in your system and things like that. So there is an appetite suppressant effect, which we will talk about that, because that became abundantly clear in another study where it was, you know, they did a study in men and a study in women, and the women in the aerobic group actually, it was an anaerobic versus aerobic, right? And the women in the aerobic group actually gained weight. But the problem is, it wasn't because of the energy level, it's because their appetite increased because mm-hmm. because the increased energy expenditure from the aerobic activity, right? But the anaerobic group had the appetite suppressing effect because your body is shocked, you know? So we'll get into that or whatever, but it's just a small little precursor. So like I said, I'm not saying that it doesn't work, because I'm just saying that it's not optimal.
Ideal.
Right?
Yes.
And the thing is, and the lower your body fat percentage is, the less useful that is, for instance. So if you have a high body fat percentage, or if you're like extremely overweight, then something like Orange Theory is going to be great because you have a lot of fat to burn. And by the time you get to that 30-minute mark, your muscles are depleted of glycogen and you're just pounding out and burning fat. But say if you're a woman who's less than 25% body fat, or you're a guy who's less than 15, and you have some musculature, have some level of development, there's a good chance that you could be breaking down muscle and converting it to energy, because that's what happens with too much cortisol, is that you have this state of catabolism, right? Because in the world of muscle building and all that, there's a difference between anabolism, which is building, and catabolism, which is breaking down. So just keep that idea with the law of diminishing returns. And if you are going to do something a little bit longer, make sure you have some carbs on hand to replenish after that 30-minute mark. That's why I have gummy bears.
Oh my goodness. No, do not listen to his gummy bear thing. So.
Well, it's what, I mean, obviously whenever I'm cutting, I switch that over to like figs. Yeah. Right. So when I'm bulking, it's more like gummy bears and some stuff like that.
Put on weight, guys. So yeah, that's not a great tip.
So, when I'm cutting, you know, like, yeah, some figs are good. You know, I just have some really quick, easy fruit. I mean, sometimes people will tell you more on the bodybuilding side to have like some like cherry juice or pomegranate juice or whatever, but that's just straight sugar. So if you want to put, you know, some dried fruit, but has some fiber in it, that's really good. But I just highly recommend that if you have the control over it and you are trying to optimize, then if you're doing it 100%, if you're actually doing the interval workouts correctly, you don't need longer than 30 minutes.
Absolutely. But, and you can do a little, like, you can do a little warm up and then, you know, then get into the sprints and then do a little cool down, and that can equate to your 30-minute workout. But mm-hmm. I think that's awesome for all of us to hear that if we want to go ahead and just fit in a 15 to 30-minute workout, we can do some sprints.
Yeah. I mean, think about this. Going back to the study where we talked about, we compared the aerobic versus anaerobic protocols, right? All they did was 4 30-second sprints compared to 30 minutes of exercise. So those 30-second sprints, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they rested for the full minute, right? Or let's say the full 2 minutes. So what's that workout? 10 minutes long?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so think about that. So you have an equal amount of calorie expenditure, with a third of the amount of time put in. And if you think about it, you just do one more sprint and you're in the positive compared to a 30-minute aerobic exercise. So
do your sprint, kids.
Absolutely.
How many times a week would you recommend a beginner starting out to do sprints?
Just starting out? And is it the only thing they're doing?
Well, hopefully they're doing some strength training.
If they're just starting out, just twice a week.
Twice a week, yeah.
Yeah. And then we'll get into some tips about that too, because that'll be at the end of this section.
Really quick though, what do you think of my pyramid run that I do? You know, I was on a kick for a while. I haven't done it in a while, but mm-hmm. It's basically you do 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, you know, and then you get to 1 minute sprint, 30 second sprint, 30 second sprint, 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute run. About a minute or so rest in between all that.
Well, first off, I mean, that sounds like a great workout.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, I mean, but there actually is a study about this, and it actually was a study that found that when athletes did a sprint workout in which they decreased the distance, it felt easier than when they increased the distance, right? So if they say if you did four sprints at 400, 300, 200, and 100 meters, right? And then you did them all out and you measured you measured your times, which... since you know what your time is, if you're a sprinter, you know that you can measure like measure that in terms of your max, right? What your max effort would be, what you would be doing if you were performing that sprint at full effort. And what they saw is that when they increased the distance from 100 to 400, that once they got back to the 400, like to the higher ranges, they weren't putting their max effort in, mm-hmm. as opposed to when they did a decreasing distance.
Oh, I like that advice. Well, so then it might be, I mean, I feel that. And also, you know, you're kind of warming up on the longer distance. So it could be better if I built it like 3 minute run, 2 minute run, you know, all with the rest in between, 1 minute run, and mm-hmm. then like 4 30 second sprints or something instead of going back up. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah. So really it's just the idea that, you know, because I used to do 400 was one of my events in high school when I ran track. And the 400 is one of the worst. The 800 is still worse, but the 400, it's just, they're both all out sprints essentially. It's just the 800, you have to pace yourself a little bit in the first lap, but the second one's still an all out sprint.
Same. Exactly. It feels worse to me
because I'm not a distance runner. But a 400 is an all out sprint for a quarter mile. It is not easy. And so imagine doing that after you've done all out 100, 200, and 300 meter sprints. You're going to be dogging it.
Yes. So
as opposed to, it's a lot easier to give yourself max effort for 10 seconds during a 100 meter sprint after you're tired than giving yourself max effort for a full minute, which would, it takes at least a minute for a normal average person to do a quarter mile sprint, if you could even finish it.
I like that. Well, so you know what? We'll put in the show notes the updated, better version of the pyramid workout, because I know some of you probably might have tried my pyramid workout. So we'll do just the decreasing version, because I like that, because then you can do a couple more all-out sprints. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're kind of saving energy, knowing that you have to go back up, that's not a good thing. Yeah. So,
But again, let me just add the caveat to that. I'm only giving the small amount of critique I have to that. For 90% of people, that difference is going to be completely infinitesimal.
So most of you would benefit from doing either style.
Yeah, just do the pyramid, okay? But but I know some of you are serious about your training in terms of the performance level, in terms of just taking it to the next level, and I'm just giving you the edge because I am a hard gainer, so I was not born with natural ability, so I've always sought the edge of how I can increase my training effort and things like that to get myself on a normal level. So that's my main thing, is that I have to emphasize, I'm only giving you the critique because she asked for the critique. I think the workout is great. And if you can complete a workout like that, you're in a good spot.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I know we're really trying to help you get your most bang for your buck. And that's what this episode is about. Again, like Chris said, any type of movement, any type of workout is so much better than nothing. But this is all about optimizing. So, I mean, that's why you took all the time to put this research together. So we appreciate it.
Oh, okay. You're welcome. Yeah, but real quick, I wanted you to kind of run down what happened in that study. Remember, I was telling you about how the women in the aerobic group had an increase in weight because of the increase in appetite. So let's talk about that study, because I thought it was really interesting in terms of the nuance.
In this women's study, subjects lost about 2.5 kilograms of body fat and lost a significant amount of belly fat. Most important, the women's study also had a group that did 40 minutes of aerobic exercise for comparison. The aerobic training group actually gained 0.44 kilograms of body fat. Despite exercising for half the time, the sprint group lost 11.2% of total fat mass, whereas the aerobic group gained fat. Now, don't get confused and conclude that aerobic exercise leads to fat gain. That is definitely not true. This was just showing that sprinting is indeed superior to aerobic exercise for body composition.
It's more of the idea that there's different hormonal things going on. There's different chemical reactions going on, like we talked about with the EPOC, the five things that they did with the body temperature, the lung and heart activity, the lactate, the hydrogen, the energy stores, the fat burning, epinephrine, and things like that. So it's more the, I think it's more of the appetite suppressing effect, like we were talking about before. It's much more likely that the women in the aerobic training group started eating more and gained fat because they were compensating for the energy burn during the workouts.
That makes sense.
Right. So like they're extremely taxed from working out for long periods of time, and it's not as intense as the anaerobic training. So they don't have that increase, that extreme increase of cortisol and that suppression effect. Cause I know, and I feel that personally when I'm done with a leg workout, and even though I'm trying to gain weight and bodybuilding rules will say that I should have a meal within an hour, like have that protein. Mm-hmm. Obviously the protein window is not, is there's no science to back it up, but they still say that you should have some carbs and a meal pretty much within an hour. I do not have that appetite ever, especially after a leg day. So I feel that effect of the anaerobic exercise.
I also like, I don't know how to say this, but I feel a lot more high. Like I feel so much better when I do actually bust my butt in a cardio workout. Like I feel that, high, and I'm assuming that maybe it has a lot to do with some of the other energy systems going on. But yeah, I think it's a good reminder that if you are eating in a calorie deficit, though, you will lose weight if you're doing sprints, if you're doing steady state cardio, all of that. We just really want you to get the most bang for your buck. And we have the studies to show that it does make it more difficult and that sprinting does lead to better body composition overall in an easier way.
Yeah. I mean, obviously calories play a part in this. And this is actually the point that we're trying to make in this, is that the calories were the same in terms of the calories burnt, but the hormonal signals that control appetite afterwards may be the main contributing factor, right? And unfortunately, due to inherent problems with like diet journals and the how they conduct the studies, which is basically on people have to remember what they eat and then retroactively write it down, and people misrecord and you know, just like lose their memory or have this this kind of bias to not really remember how crappily they've been eating, how frequently they're like,
I'm like, unless you planned ahead, who remember? Like, I don't remember what I ate 3 days ago unless you're
meal prepping. Yeah. Right. And so the studies really haven't been able to nail down how much of a role of reduced appetite factors into fat loss for, you know, interval training and things like that. So I think that's one of the flaws with the comparisons between anaerobic and anaerobic training studies. But I think this was one of the clear studies to show that it needs to be looked into. But we do know from animal studies that intense exercise leads to the release of these appetite-suppressing hormones, and these are called corticotropin-releasing hormones. And additionally, that you also have a decrease in blood flow to the GI tract, which may lower hunger in the few hours post-workout, so that may be a factor as well.
Wow.
A third factor that plays a role in the fat loss effect is the release of fat-burning hormones. So a study in Canada found that normal weight women who did 6 weeks of sprint training, which is about 4 to 6 sprints for 30 seconds on a treadmill, lost about 1.2 kilograms of body fat, shrank their waistlines by 3.5%, and gained 0.6 kilograms of lean muscle. Damn, that's just with no...
Sign me up for that program.
Seriously, just with no weightlifting either. And so research points to the fact that the sprints are a catalyst for improving the body's ability to burn fat. The study says higher intensity exercise requires more energy, which leads to release of growth hormone and catecholamines, both of which drive fat burning in the body. Fat burning is key because if you eat a high carb diet, your body won't have the enzymes and other metabolic machinery to burn fat effectively, which means you're more prone to food cravings and increased appetite. So this is most true if you are a sedentary individual or if you don't exercise frequently.
Which is so interesting because I do find that like part of the reason I like exercise is because I feel like, yeah, I don't feel like my appetite's out of control. One, I feel more focused, but also my appetite feels more regulated, which is so weird because it's like when I'm exercising, I'm like, I shouldn't be as hungry, but I feel like because of this effect, it kind of helps. That makes sense. It helps regulate your appetite. And I literally feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense to me.
All right. And finally, one last piece of scientific information I'm going to give you on sprints is that they're thought to increase activity of one type of fat receptor called B adrenergic receptor. And those are in your abdominal region. So this means that sprinting has a much greater effect on reducing belly fat than more moderate forms of exercises like aerobic training, which is like the steady state cardio. And so whether or not they want to talk about this fat receptor and whether or not that's contentious, we do know that it does have an improved ability to target belly fat more than lifts, as opposed to just a general overall effect. So, I mean, there's no reason why you should be incorporating it at least once a week in your workouts, unless you have, you know, unless you're just trying to bodybuild.
Well, so there you have it. So to conclude this section of the podcast, there are three mechanisms behind the fat loss effects of sprint training. So one is increased EPOC, so elevated metabolism and greater calorie burn in the extended recovery period after your workout. Two is reduced appetite, allowing for lower food intake or also just more regulated overall. Three is increased fat burning due to greater release of catecholamines and growth hormone. So I hope we motivated you to really start sprinting again. If you haven't sprinted in a while, that's okay. Just get back into it. If you haven't ran in a while, you know, you can start there and do what you can and really push the effort. And we promise you'll feel better later. It'll be absolutely worth maybe not feeling so great during the sprint.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you are overweight and sedentary, you could start with stationary bike sprints. You don't have to be on your feet, you know, so that you do.
That's a great idea.
So don't do the one where you're laying back, where you're riding, reclining. Like you're in a recliner, because it's kind of harder to be in a sprint mode. If you have to, by all means do it. But start with a bike. Another option for novices is to try high intensity efforts at 1 minute, followed by a 1 minute rest period. Repeated 10 times for a total of 20 minutes.
That's a solid workout. I mean, I would still do that to this day.
Yeah, you still do. I mean, that's your, that sometimes we'll do.
That is my go-to.
Yeah, sometimes we do a morning circuit just to like wake everything up or whatever. And that's enough for some
people. I'll also do that on the Stairmaster. I like to do that 1 minute slower and then 1 minute pushing it really hard for 20 minutes. That's another winter workout.
That's great. If you're fit but need to lose fat, you can try what's called the Wingate protocol, which is 30 seconds of an all-out effort followed by 4 minutes of recovery, and repeat that 4 to 6 times. And this protocol can be done on a stationary bike, on a track. Intervals can be done in 200 meters, things like that. You can push a weight sled. You can get creative with it.
If you want to take things a little bit slower, we suggest trying 5 repeats of 3 minutes at a moderate intensity interspersed with 1, 2, 3 minutes of active rest.
Mm-hmm. And you can also try a descending distance protocol if you don't want to start off doing sprints all the way. If you're a little bit more advanced and you don't want to be on the bike, but you're not really ready to go to a top speed, you can do the 400 meters, rest 4 minutes, 300 meters, rest 3 minutes, 200 meters, rest 2 minutes, and then 100 meters, and then you're done.
Sounds a little bit like my interval. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
See, I was on the right track.
It's a little bit easier, so that's a little bit easier than your pyramid.
We also want to remind you to always start with like a quick 5 minute warm up is good to raise your body temperature. You don't want to, it's not good to sprint cold. That's a bad idea.
Get out of your car, walk into the track, do
a
sprint.
That's how you pull a calf, man.
That's how you, a hamstring, anything.
Sounds like a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. And just to reiterate what Amanda was asking earlier about how frequently that should be, depending on your experience level and fitness capacity, do about 2 to 4 days a week on alternate days. Don't do them 2 days in a row. That's just asking for a pulled hamstring or something like that.
Or you're probably not really sprinting, because I feel like I'd do that and then I wouldn't really sprint.
Yeah. And if you're also doing another type of protocol, say you do like a HIIT training workout most of the days, or if you're strength training, then 2 days of sprinting is sufficient. You don't need any more of that. If sprints are your primary form of exercise, 3 to 4 days a week is ideal when you build up to that. Obviously, when you're first starting, which we'll get into with the weight training stuff, every time you start a new program, should never go balls to the wall the first time you do it. You know, you should always go in, leave a little bit of fuel left in the tank, and that way, because once your body does something new, it's already shocked from the new patterns of movement and new combinations of things in terms of different orders and whatever. So you don't need to go all out. You know, got nothing to prove. You're not training for a competition. So just chill out and ease into it. And so obviously the best results come from the fact that you're doing these things consistently. And most significant body composition changes happen within 6 weeks. And when I say within 6 weeks, I'm talking about you have wait for that 6 weeks. So don't just be like, oh, it's been 3 weeks and I haven't seen anything. Just you have to play the long game. Don't get discouraged.
Another way to switch it up when you are doing sprints is to add in some resistance. So you can use a resisted bike. You can use a rowing machine. Hills are always great. I mean, we live in LA. I have a hard time finding hills here, but they're great. Or stairs, or even a weighted sled if you go to a gym. That's always a great option. And then this will, you know, help you build more lean mass over time. If you're not incorporating strength training again, this is a way to add in kind of a form of strength training by adding in that resistance.
And I know it seems like we're beating it to death. Not that you need any more reasons to do it, but sprint or anaerobic training in general, it just improves overall fitness. It boosts mood, increases insulin sensitivity, lowers blood pressure, and enhances brain function. So I should just stop it there because I don't need to say anything else about sprinting, do I? All right.
I think we sold you on that. Yeah. Maybe a little bit too much, but yeah. I also resold myself. So
yeah.
I'm going to do some sprints ASAP.
Yeah. And like I said, there are a few exceptions to this. There's evidence to show that too much HIIT training can actually eat away at your gains if you're a bodybuilder. So like I said, you may not want to do that. Maybe steady state walking on an incline. It may be better if you're a bodybuilder and you're at 10% body fat and you're just trying to get a little bit extra sprinting and doing that might be good, but you don't want to make that your main protocol. You probably want to do some low steady state to increase movement.
So that's it for our sprint podcast. We know it may be a little bit difficult to get outside, especially if you're in a crowded place like New York or maybe even downtown Los Angeles. So in that case, you're going to have to try to do certain things like resistance training or explosive HIIT moves. So some of our favorite explosive HIIT moves include things like push-ups, pull-ups, squat, lunges, jump lunges. I love my jump lunges, tuck jumps, plyo bridges, and squat jumps. So there's a bunch of different moves you can do if you can't get outside and do sprints. There's a lot of videos on YouTube, so use that as a resource. And Chris and I will also keep trying to share some workouts on my story, again, at Meow Mikes. And like we said, if you can't get outside or you can't do any of these moves and you have a bike at home, you can also do stationary bike sprints. That's another option for you. So unfortunately, we have to stay creative during these times, but don't get discouraged. There are tons of ways to stay fit, build muscle, or lose weight, even when you have limited space and equipment, and we're going to be here for you, helping you along the way.
Yeah, make sure you check out the show notes for this. Amanda's going to share her pyramid workout that we talked about. I'll share a couple sprint workout protocols. We'll share the studies that we use to tell you this information, and we really want to hear your feedback on this, whether or not you tried any of the sprint workouts, whether or not you tried Amanda's pyramid workout, and we really want to know what you're doing to stay active during these times.
Absolutely. Don't forget to leave us a rating if you have a moment and let us know what you're doing, and we'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Yep. See you.